From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of April 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, and get an update of the weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way today, Lisa Braltz will be here with Backyard Industry, as she is every other Thursday right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Well, let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Nearby May wheat up 6 3/4 on this rainy day, $6.76. The settlement price July at $6.81 3/4, 6 3/4 higher. The hard red July at $7.47 3/4, up 5.5 cents. March corn, or rather May corn futures, $5 even. 4 1/4 cents higher. July at 5.05 1/4, up 4 1/4, and September at 5.02 3/4, 4 1/4 higher. December contract at 5.01 1/2 in the corn pit. That's the new crop, up 4.5 cents. In March of next year at $5.08 1/4, up 4 cents for the day. Jumping to July corn, 5.17 for 2015, up 4.5 cents. May futures in the bean pit up 13, $14.75 1/4 to the final trade and settlement price. July at $14.54 1/4, up 13, and August at $13.73 1/4, up 9 cents. September beans, $12.55 1/4, 3.5 higher in November. That's the new crop harvest month, $12.03 1/2, up 5 1/2. January futures of next year, $12.08 1/4, up 5 1/2 cents. And the March contract, $12.12, up 5 1/4. Bean meal at $4.80 10, up $3.60. Bean oil at $41.67, 82 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the April contract, $145.15, up 55 cents. June at $137.37 1/2, up 60. In August, live cattle up 27 1/2 at $135.70, or rather $134.75. April feeder cattle, $178.82 1/2, up $1.60. May at $180.15, $2.17 1/2 higher. And August futures there at $181.82 1/2, up $2.25. Lean hogs, $125.75 in the lead option. April down $1.25, and the June futures at $123.55. We're down $1.25 as well. You're listening to Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, May contract, $100.34 a barrel, up 72 cents. The RBOB gasoline at $2.99, that's up 4 2/10. And ethanol futures at $2.70, broke 50 cents today. Natural gas at $4.45 2/10, up 8 8/10 of a cent. Natural and the diesel fuel at $2.90 3/10 of a cent, up 3 6/10 of a cent. Gold futures $1,284.40 an ounce, $6.30 lower on the day. And the U.S. dollar at 80.48 is up 0.26. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area and Champaign County today. We'll see occasional showers, a few thunderstorms. Those have been heavy at times. And then tonight, showers and thunderstorms will continue. Some of them may be severe. Lows in the upper 40s this evening, and south winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour, with a gust to around 25. Chance of precipitation set at 90% for the evening. Friday, mostly cloudy skies, a 40% chance of rainfall in the morning. Cooler then, highs around 50 degrees. It'll be very windy tomorrow. West winds at 25 to 30 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 45. And Saturday, sunny skies and highs in the lower 50s. North winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Saturday night, clear with a low in the mid-30s. Sunday, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 50s. And Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of rainfall, lows around 40 degrees. Monday, rain likely, highs in the lower 50s, chance of precipitation set at 60% for Monday. During the day, Monday evening, mostly cloudy, a 30% chance of rainfall, low in the upper 30s, and Tuesday, sunny skies, a 30% chance of showers in the area, highs in the upper 50s, and Tuesday evening, mostly cloudy, with a low in the mid-30s. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Now let's, on this Thursday afternoon, take a look at the marketplace and how it traded and what impact it might have over time. On the phone line with us from Mandeville, Louisiana, is Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, let's talk about what the marketplace might do here. We have a couple of reports behind us. The ever-important month of March is out of the way. WASDE is coming up next week on the 9th, I believe, for its release. And when you take a look at the charts, I'm wondering what you see for this week, because it's been fun to watch the weekly numbers as they trade. There's outside weeks all over the place.
Yeah, and the only thing that I can really say when you come to the price action, basically since this rally began in late January, early February, is your reversal down type price actions have basically have been negated within two or three days. And so that hasn't really been a strong signal to look for, you know, in finding a top in this market. Now, someday one of these reversals will catch. The question is which one? And yesterday we did record, you know, a major key reversal outside down in the beans. And what I mean by a key reversal is that you made a new contract high and then closed sharply lower, and then it was an outside down. So that really stood out, at least on the daily chart. But now today's comeback is basically an inside day, same way with corn, same way with wheat. So while today's higher closes was an indication that maybe that reversal could be suspect because it didn't show any downside follow-through activity in the overnight trade and as well as here in the regular session. An inside day is considered kind of a breather day, neutral day, and that kind of leaves tomorrow as kind of a real key day in how this market is going to perform as we go into the crop report. My guess is, since we're only, you know, a few days away from it, I think it's next Wednesday, maybe the market will just kind of consolidate. But, you know, we are well ahead for the week, so we are going to close out the week higher after that big surge that we had there on Monday, at least on corn and soybeans. Wheat may end up closing out lower, but corn and soybeans are going to close out higher. And we'll see what the weather pattern and everything looks like next week, because the market is going to start shifting toward planting activity, how quickly this crop's going to go in the ground, what kind of where it's going in the ground at, and all this kind of stuff. And at least at the moment, it doesn't look like anybody's going to be doing anything big in the next couple of weeks anyway.
And so just to recap, we've been talking about beans, the May contract in particular, making a new contract high, posting an outside down or a key reversal on the daily charts yesterday, but looking like at this point it may post an up week in that particular marketplace. And then we have a whole bunch of outside things happening in the corn pit on the charts, and those are in the weekly charts. I suppose they could go either way yet. I haven't actually figured the numbers. I can't imagine they're too. Yeah, they can still go either way. What do you think will happen?
Well, my bias is the trend is up. Corn futures traced out a monthly or a quarterly reversal to the upside during the January, Feb, March quarter. So that as far as I'm concerned, that kind of lays the technical groundwork for this market to strengthen all the way into the growing season. So I'm quite positive yet the corn market. I think once this overbought technical condition kind of runs its course, I think there's room for another surge up yet in corn. Conservatively, I'm still looking at May and December corn futures trying on the shoe size of 5 1/4. So I'm still kind of in that camp. Soybeans, they kind of stair-step up. What I'm looking at is a wheat futures chart. You know, we broke out of that 96-cent trading range that we spent during the fall months back in early February. We doubled that. We went up to 1460, and then we kind of had a correction. And now this week we have broken above the second 96-cent trading range. So, and we're holding above that. So the next upside target based upon this methodology is going to be about 1563. But 15 1/4 is going to be the first hurdle. And then I think if you could go through 15 1/4, then we are on our way then to 1560 or something like that on the front end in November.
Mm-hmm. So 520
front end May.
Yeah, 525 for corn nearby May and December, and then on May beans you're up much.
15 1/4.
15 1/4.
And then maybe a good run up at the 1570, 1575 area, because the channel is slanted. It does have a slight slant to the upside. So by the time we get up in that area, it could be the 1575.
And then November beans, does it get drug along or not?
November beans will go along. What I'm looking at is if we can negate this reversal, like I said, today's is kind of an inside day. What I would like to see to be bullish these commodities is see a higher close tomorrow, preferably above today's high point. I think that would lay the groundwork then that everything could go on up to the next leg, and my target area on November 14 beans is going to be 1250, and then there's one about 1275. So kind of following along with the May, but we'll be a couple dollars short. I do think a move to 12-something is definitely in the cards for November beans.
Any fundamental reasons to support all those pushes higher?
Beans... If you look at your weekly export sales or your marketing year sales, we're 105 million bushels above USJ's projections. So USJ's, since they didn't find any beans on the March report, next week's supply-demand revisions, they're going to have to do some they're going to really have to sharpen their pencil, because if you subtract 100 million off of our 130 million bushel carryout or 135 million bushel carryout, then you come into a negative deal. So we're going to either have to import some beans, or we're going to have to go up to a price level to cut demand to the point that we can get by. So beans still look like, old crop beans still are in a rationing mode, that could pull your November beans along with it just for the idea that we need more bean acres. On corn, we've already exceeded USDA's projection by about 8 million here today, or a couple million. So I think you're going to see USDA is going to have to wrestle with a higher export projection. I think you could probably go above 1,700, whether or not USDA does that right away, but you could probably add another 100 million to exports on corn. Instead of 16 1/4, be 17 1/4. And since they didn't find any bushels on the March report, we're going to be talking about a carryout something around 1.3 something, and that's only about 700 million bushels short of what the bears were talking about 4 or 5 months ago. So all of a sudden, we've got much tighter balance sheets. The spring weather pattern is not very conducive to an early planting anyway. If anything, we're going to start squeezing the planting window in if some of this cold and wet weather materializes over the next couple, 3 weeks.
Hey, thanks, Dan. We'll talk with you again tomorrow for Commodity Week.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027. Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's a quick look at a couple of news items for the day. Troubles in the hog industry could benefit poultry. Rabobank released an in-house report on the effects of PEDV on the hog industry and the ripple effect across the protein sector for the next 18 months to 2 years. Will Sawyer, a Rabobank vice president in the Food and Ag Research Department, authored the report. While many producers have lost all their piglets to PEDV, for those with survivors that do make it to market, there will be a silver lining.
Your farrow to finish operators who are able to actually bring hogs to market could actually receive very high margins. Hog prices this summer are expected to reach all-time highs. Every hog that does come to market could realize margins for the farmer of as high as $60 per head.
Speaking of silver lining, Sawyer feels that as pork prices increase, sales of poultry will increase as well.
I think the poultry sector is the one that's going to clearly benefit from this. Our friends in the beef industry are expected to reduce supply in the U.S. by around 5-6%, according to USDA estimates. And we think pork production could be down nearly 7% in 2014. That's a good scenario for the U.S. poultry industry, who effectively becomes the protein of last resort, if you will. And I think they are going to be in a position to increase production, but absolutely realize much higher prices as consumers shift down from beef and pork and into poultry.
Rabobank's Will Sawyer, he serves with the Food and Agriculture Research Department as a vice president. Our audio from him was gathered and put together by Rhonda Garrison of the Southern Farm Network out of Raleigh, North Carolina, an NAFB member.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Coming up next, Lisa Brault says do-it-yourself garden inspiration begins with seeing the possibilities in this 2012 Encore edition of Backyard Industry.
About 6 years ago, I was on a walk in the neighborhood when something caught my eye. It wasn't anything that would be exciting to most people. It was several panels of sturdy wooden fencing about 3 feet high that had recently been pulled up and were leaning against the house they'd once surrounded. The fencing was kind of old and had definitely seen better days. But every day for weeks, I'd walk by and look at that fencing with longing. I would visualize bringing it back to our house. Well, asking my husband to help me get it back to our house, where I would then transform it into something I'd been looking for but had been unable to find anywhere. A decent trellis for cucumbers. A few weeks later, the property owner said it was okay to haul the fence away, and it sits in my garden today as a trellis. That was BF, before Facebook. While I love the internet and social media as much as the next person, and probably even more, I do think sometimes that sites like Pinterest and Facebook and garden-heavy blogs end up being less about inspiration and more about intimidation. We become highly reliant on visuals to show us how to do things or how others think we should do things. Unfortunately, many of these images feature yard spaces or tools or structures that cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars to create, and the exact materials can be difficult to find even if you can afford them. This can be a major deterrent to someone just wanting to get started with a few tomato plants and maybe some peppers, and if they're really feeling crazy, some beans with a pole habit. It can also make those of us who have spent years scavenger gardening a little lazy. So let's quit looking at the internet for a spell and let's get creative. Get funky. Regard the stuff in your garage or your neighbor's garage with a new eye. Often the things you're looking at online or in catalogs aren't that well made and end up not being what you need anyway. Case in point, my friend and neighbor Christina has sweet peas in her garden. Sweet Peas needs support, and hers were growing like gangbusters. But no matter where she looked, she was unable to find exactly what she wanted in terms of actual support and aesthetics.
So I had some chicken wire just kind of laying around, like you do. And then I got some dowels, and I had some other pieces of sticks and stuff. So I just put the two dowels up, and then I have the chicken wire in between, and then I put the other stick in the middle.
The end result, a trellis that cost a few dollars in materials, wasn't hard to make, and provides her sweet peas with the support they need. Also, it looks cool. This is not just advice for people new on the gardening scene. I got a late start gardening this year because my hose was broken. Yes, you heard me. I put off getting things in the ground because my hose was not functioning and I was too grumpy about it to consider planting my garden. Time went by and it felt like it was moving even faster due to the warm spring weather. Finally, my plans to just take the easy way out and buy some seeds and some plant starts and maybe even a new hose just gave way to a desire to look around my house and garden and garage and to figure it out. I'd worry about the hose later. I went through my collection of bamboo poles given to me by my neighbor Ed, who grows it. Some were in rough shape, but there were plenty there for growing lots of beans.
These are all flower seeds. Years old, so
I went through the big box of seeds, and while I found a lot of seeds that were about 5 years old and probably not worth planting, I also found a lot of seeds for annual flowers and vegetables that were totally plantable. I had the tools I needed to get things started, and I realized that's what I've loved so much about coaxing food out of the ground over the years. It's not about what the compost bin looks like, it's about the compost. Beans and peas and tomatoes don't really care what the trellis is made from, they just want to grow. It was around this time that my husband figured out that repairing the hose would cost about $3. The garden is totally happening.
Our thanks, of course, go to Lisa Braltz for her backyard industry segments. Those are put together with the help of the Director of Illinois Public Media Agriculture, Dave Dickey. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn now to the cash grain market, and we'll talk a little bit about what's been happening there. Matt Bennett is on the phone line. He's at TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's a rainy afternoon. I suppose that's not so bad. Kind of need the rain before we get started for the season. And kind of like temperatures to come up, so farmers have nothing to do but sell corn and bring it to you. Have they been doing it?
Yeah, you know, we had a little more activity probably earlier in the week than maybe what we have here today. A lot of guys coming in to talk and, you know, maybe loaf a little bit, but really not a whole lot going on today.
Are you able to talk them into making sales, and are you trying to do that?
Well, you know, we had some targets set that once May would get to the $5 level to go ahead and let go of some more cash corn. And then as far as fall corn goes, you know, getting $5 and over would be a good place to add to sales as well. And guys are fairly proactive.
Now, are you at $5 cash as your basis?
No.
I didn't think so.
All right.
Okay, so it was $5 in the lead option May contract.
Yep.
Farmers are standing aside at this point. What do you think about the cash market as we go over the next month? Because producers will not only stand aside, but they'll be really busy very, very soon.
Well, I think that you're right. You know, coming up, that's what's going to be going on. This guy's going to be in the field and going to kind of forget about it a little bit maybe. And most guys are more or less aware of that. They've seen this really nice run up, and so they feel pretty comfortable with where they're at, I guess, and, you know, after making a few sales maybe this week. But, you know, to me, I think it's probably going to get a little bit quiet with the cash grain movement. And so I did hear a few basis levels widening out today, but locally we really haven't done anything yet. So.
And quickly, your bids for the dime.
481 on cash corn, 473 for fall, 1478 for cash beans, 1176 for fall.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Don.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. Back in 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast.
It's National Chocolate Mousse Day. The exact date of the first chocolate mousse recipe is unknown, but it's believed to be from the second half of the 1800s. The oldest U.S. print reference for chocolate mousse dates back to the October 7, 1892 edition of the New York Times. Dessert mousses, most often fruit, began to appear in numbers in the second half of the 19th century. By the way, food historians say the chocolate mousse was promoted in the U.S. about the same time as chocolate pudding mixes. On this day in agricultural history in 1829, James Carrington of Connecticut patented a coffee mill. Carrington was widely known as a machinist, and he served as shop foreman of Eli Whitney's gun manufactory. In 1825, he resigned his position and established his own foundry, which made coffee mills and razor scraps. In 1845, on this date, William James Farrer was born. An Australian agriculturalist, he developed several new varieties of drought and rust-resistant wheat that made possible the great expansion of Australia's wheat belt. The result was an average wheat yield gain of 3 bushels to the acre between 1900 and 1920. And in 1974, on this day, was the largest single-day outbreak of tornadoes in recorded history. In all, there were 148 tornadoes in 13 states in 26 hours. The outbreak included 6 F5 tornadoes and 30 F4 tornadoes. Damages were put at $3.5 billion. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago is on the phone line to take up the forecast. Let's start here in the Midwest, Mike. Over this past couple of days and maybe through the next 24 hours, there'll be a lot of rainfall across the Midwest. Not so much concerned about that, but impact of it as we go through the next 2 weeks and what temperatures might look like and whether the soil temps at the 4-inch level might come up enough to get to the point where we'll get to 50 degrees, whether we'll be ahead or behind or where we stand at the moment, and the kinds of things that come with early spring. What do you see?
Well, temperatures across southern Illinois at the topsoil level have warmed into the lower 50s over the last couple of days. So we're starting to see the first signs that we are going to be able to plant, at least to, based on that topsoil reading. The real problem we have, though, as you mentioned, is that we do have heavy rain occurring, not only over the last 24 hours, but it will continue at times through the next 24 hours. And again, it looks like Sunday and Monday, so we have a few more rounds of rain to go through, especially from the southern Corn Belt through the Delta. From right around Champaign-Urbana, more off to the south, that's where the best rain chances are over the next 5 days. Once you get later into next week, it does dry out a bit, but it does turn unseasonably cool for several days. And with that cool pattern, one thing we have to monitor is that when you have cool temperatures aloft, it's very easy to pop scattered showers all across the region during the afternoon. So we think it won't be completely dry next week, even though it will be drier without an organized rain system beyond the Sunday-Monday period. After that, it does warm up substantially. We have fairly high confidence in a big warm-up starting in about a week from now. So say next Thursday, Friday, we'll start to see temperatures into the 60s and 70s across a large portion of the Corn Belt. The only problem is that we do see cool fronts moving across the Great Lakes, which will temper warming. And more importantly, it looks like there also is a high probability for Gulf winds to start to blow northward and transport high humidity back into the Delta and the Corn Belt. But such is a situation that's fairly conducive to periods of heavy rain beginning around Friday or Saturday next weekend and then continuing at times into mid-April. So once you put all this together, we're not super excited about chances for planting to begin in timely fashion, simply because we have cool conditions right now. We also have rain occurring over the next 5 days. And even though it does begin to warm up, it doesn't stay very warm, and we also see better rain chances with that warm up. So, again, once you put all this together, we do have a little bit, we can make an argument, we should say, that we won't have a great start to planting for corn this year. But keep in mind, yields are primarily driven by weather that occurs much later in the season. So even though it might not be ideal from that perspective, it's not necessarily detrimental either.
In just a minute left, a very quick look at the beginning of the growing season in China.
Well, China's been unseasonably warm in recent weeks, and that pattern will continue. Although they have been very dry over the last month as well, this is an area that is very dry at this time of the year. Over the last 30 days or so, average rainfall is only around 1/3 to 2/3 of an inch across the key regions. So from that perspective alone, all you really need is one rain event, and you're right back to normal. Their climate is similar to that of western Kansas and eastern Colorado at this time of the year, where it's very dry. But then it turns sharply wetter once we get into May and June. So at this point, we're looking for rapid planting across China simply because of the mild conditions, but eventually we'll be looking for more rain.
Thanks so much, Mike. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.